Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Pro Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Kyle Devin. I'm the senior analyst at Inside Lacrosse, and today I'm joined by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside Lacrosse freelance contributor and pro lacrosse analyst.
Lacrosse is back. It's back, man. How we feeling?
Feeling great. It's officially back.
Yes, and now, you know, we're recording this right after the fourth day of games, which I definitely said was the third day before it started. So that will put you in the similar headspace where I was at after watching all these games with pretty much only breaks to sleep and eat and write. But we're kind of at the halfway point of this quote unquote season. Chris, how do you feel about the MLL calling this a season? Because I hate it. I think it's misleading and also stupid.
Yeah, I think it's pointless. Like, it's a tournament, right? Is it not? Is it not a tournament? I feel like it'd be okay to call it a tournament. But I also think they kind of had all their 20th anniversary stuff kind of planned and locked in, maybe ordered some stationery or something, maybe some t-shirts, and didn't want to go back on the whole thing. And then you get the asterisk and you're like, well, is this going to be the 20th next year? Or is it going to be the 21st? How are we going to do it? So I think they just kind of didn't want to deal with whether or not this counted or not, because, I mean, it's a tournament.
That being said, one of the things they did add was a new ball. And this new ball, the produced by Signature Lacrosse, is very visible on the field. I enjoy that part of it. Couple people on the field kind of blaming the ball for some turnovers. There has been sloppy play. A lot has been made and kind of put on the ball. And I have some information on the ball that I'll share after your opinion. But what do you make of it? And do you have a take on it?
So, it does pop out more. It stands out, better contrast. And so that's obviously great. I think that's the biggest concern, you know, for any sort of televised sport. That was always the thing that you'd hear long ago when people were talking about how do we get professional lacrosse to be, you know, truly main stage accepted. And it was like, well, you know, if you can't see the ball, it's going to be very difficult for a casual observer to follow the game. So I think they got that taken care of to a much better degree. Apparently it's lighter and it kind of goes shooting out of the stick and soaring off into space. You know, we've seen a lot of passes kind of go skying out of the way. You know, a lot of passes that would probably connect last year do seem to be a bit off. But the only reason I know that it's lighter, personally, I haven't held the ball, but I know that because the announcers said that, like when they were explaining another unforced turnover. They would say, you know, oh, you know, they mentioned that the ball's lighter, and maybe it's curving in an unpredictable fashion. And, you know, I don't know for sure how much the new ball is the problem and how much is rust. That, you know, this isn't necessarily an ideal time to try out a new ball because of, you know, everybody coming together for this short time and everybody, you know, locked in their homes so much leading up to the event. But I have to imagine Signature can't be pleased with how many times the broadcasters are mentioning, you know, they're kind of explaining away some of the turnovers, attributing it to the new ball. So what do you think? Like, do you think the ball itself is getting too much blame?
So let me read you a tweet that I got, a DM that I got from a player. I'm not going to say who it was. I'll spill a little. I play MLL, and having used the balls this week, it's very different. Specifically on GBs and passes over 20 yards. The ball is lighter and softer, and it sails. And, you know, he goes on to say he wanted to send it as a DM because he didn't want it to be public. And you know, I respect that. So I'm not going to tell you who it is. And that's just one person sending me that. I've gotten literally, let me count, 7 interactions in you know, tweet and direct message and also in text messages. So it's different, right? And the reason I got some of those wasn't because I asked for them. I made a comment that the long pole play has been sloppy. And regardless of the ball, the long pole play has been sloppy. And I stand behind that. Now, can part of that be put down to the ball? Of course. I'm not dismissing that. I don't think that it's not a problem. Do I think that it's a little overblown if it's only the poles that have a problem with it? And the other players are adjusting faster? Maybe. I don't know. I just think that maybe blaming the ball for it is not the best. It's definitely not the best look. And it's also, you know, that's why you see a lot of guys rolling the ball out, and that's caused turnovers. I think the short, the long boxes and the opposite sidelines, I mean, it's led to a really bad hit. It's killed transition. I don't think it's a success. Everyone is like, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to revolutionize stuff. It killed transition, guys. The boxes are too long. I get it if they're not as long and you have to still run. Guys are like, they're not even doing delayed subs or like lining their guys up. The boxes are a mess. The boxes are a mess. All six teams. You're terrible at running the box. And I feel okay saying that because I ran a box in college for every team that I coached. And it's hard. And I can't imagine doing it with the larger box. It's not easy. But there's no – the systems they're using are not working. So hopefully, you know, they're reassessing that and figuring that out and making that better and having offense on one side, defense on the other. Like, I've seen guys, like, cross the line, go off sides, not know when they're supposed to go on. Like, you have to be organized running that box. And I just don't – I don't have any faith in any of those people running the boxes right now. So it's – again, that is also a thing that could be, hey, we're back. We haven't done this in a year. I get it. You don't practice subbing the box in practice. It's not something you work on, right? It's not something you draw up. You don't have a play for it per se.
Right.
But, I mean, you look at a team like – I will say, you look at a team like the Bayhawks. The Bayhawks have a box side, off box side ride. Does anyone else? I don't think so. I really don't think so. The Bayhawks attack would run back to the half line to ride. Does anyone else do that? Hell no. No, you're not doing that. You should if you want to win a championship. But, you know, I digress. What did you make of the first three games for kind of each team? And we're going to go through team by team, starting with the team in last place all the way up to the first place teams. But what did you make of the first few games? And did anything in particular stand out to you?
Yeah, so here's the things that stood out, like in the general sense. First of all, it looks to be an absolutely brutal, brutal tournament. Just asking a lot about these guys. And I know a lot of us have played in tournaments where, you know, whatever sort of, you know, post-grad location you want to go to, where you're not entirely unfamiliar with playing a game, and then, you know, you go to the local bar or whatever, then you play your next game the next morning or whatever like that. But I do think this is sort of cranked up an extra notch or two. It is super hot right now. I'm not too far away from Annapolis. I'm a decent drive. You know, I could attend this sort of event. And it's been absolutely miserable around here. It's absolute worst for those guys. You know, they're saying temperature 120, you know, on the actual gameplay surface. So doing that one day and then, you know, I guess getting up to your hotel room and trying to just get your temperature back down to normal and get your legs back in shape and everything, it's a lot to ask that, you know, these guys traditionally aren't used to doing. You know, it's not like play on a Saturday and then you take the week to recover like they've been used to doing the past couple of years, you know, for veterans in the pro game. So that kind of adds an element to this that, you know, the players and the coaches, you know, managing gameplay and everything like that. I think it's kind of been interesting to see how they're doing it. And if further this thing goes along, if they're kind of adjusting things like this to get players, you know, for a team that's already clinched or something like that, are we going to see them a little bit less or a little bit more in these remaining games in the regular season, if you want to call it a season? I wish the games were a little bit later. I feel like the Bayhawks Cannons game, when they had the big storm and it bumped the time back, I felt like there was more of a sort of audience presence for it, at least online, when you had an 8 o'clock game. And also, you know, the weather was a little cooler, so I feel like that would have helped. But I also assume there's some reason they didn't have 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock games. You know, the field facilities, I'm sure they worked on that. You know, they have clocks, they could have figured that out. They know the sun goes down, so I assume they took care of that. Two other standouts, hits. I think there's been a lot of hits. I don't know, yeah, if more than usual. Maybe it's just because the games are so compacted that I'm noticing a lot more hits. But I feel like it's been a pretty physical tournament. And the offensive highlights, I feel like pretty much every game, we've gotten a fair share of something that's, you know, made its way around the internet very quickly, and they've obviously made a major attempt to get those things clipped and sent out immediately so we can all talk about them as soon as they happen or get them up on SportsCenter or something like that. So kudos to them, and kudos to everybody for taking those big hits as well as they've been doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it only took another league doing it better than them and every other league before them for them to invest in that. But
right.
It's late, but it's great. Good work. I'm glad they hired some lacrosse-centric freelancers as well. I've seen their work on Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff. And, you know, that's great to see that part of the community get a chance. And if it's, you know, one of the hardest things about working in lacrosse is getting your start. Right? Getting the first check, you know, getting
sure.
the first check is probably the hardest thing to do, because a lot of people, and people should stop doing this, do stuff for free. Like, stop doing stuff for free, dude. Honestly, stop doing it. If you're good enough, someone will pay you. That's how it works. And you just have to keep working. That's all. I don't know. I've seen a lot of that this week, and it's kind of annoying me. Like, you got to stand up for yourselves, guys. You're creators. Like, they need you more than you need them. That is the thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That is the thing you can say to pretty much every company, league, team, player, anybody, coach, whatever. You need me more than I need you. Okay. So if you want to haggle over price, that's fine. But you know, for everyone out there trying to do that, trying to get that hustle on, stand your ground. You know, stand up to being used. Don't be used. We are halfway through the tournament, and I know you have some MVP candidates, so I'm going to let you go first with yours.
So I'm going to say, until they lose, I'm likely to toss potential MVP candidate nods to a pair of Bayhawks. Andrew Q obviously started off on fire, 6 for 6 that first game. And I think he's just kind of been a dangerous option in that Chesapeake offense that was, you know, missing Steele Stanwyck. Obviously, they still had someone, we can talk about in a second, who you weren't too worried about the offense. But you do have to wonder, if Stanwyck isn't quarterbacking, how the defenses are going to adjust. You know, maybe they're going to double Lyle Thompson a little sooner or something like that. But I think Andrew Q has made it so the attackmen and the midfielders who run for the Bayhawks kind of have this escape valve. And once they draw a double from either spot, they can dish to him and he finishes. He is making defenses pay for their mistakes very often. And of course, my second MVP candidate, stay on the same team, stay in the same position, Lyle Thompson. He's consistently drawing those double teams, consistently drawing the triple teams, whatever it takes to get the job done. He's riding, like, you know, that's one of the things. I'm not going to say it's an underrated part or, you know, he doesn't get enough attention for it, because I think he gets plenty of attention for it. Very, very skilled on the ride, putting out a lot of effort, generating turnovers, and, of course, just running the offense itself. So, you know, as long as they're up there leading the pack, I'm going to pick one of those two guys to lead the way.
Yeah, I think, you know, not to be totally in the bag for the Bayhawks, but I think their best player's been Phipps as well. On the other side, like, the Bayhawks are still letting up their fair share amount of shots. Like, it's not like they're winning these games by 10, you know, but at the same, because they're not really running to outscore teams. They're just, they out talent teams, right? I mean, that's the thing about this Bayhawks team. It's just, they're just out talenting defenses. That there's no defense that can really hang with them at the moment in this league. So I think, yes, the two guys that you mentioned are a huge part of that. But on the other side of the ball, to secure victories, they've had to lean on Phipps a lot. I mean, he had a 16-save game already. He had a 13-save game already. It's crazy. I mean, those aren't like – he's not saving 30, but 16 and 13 is nothing to scoff at in a league that has – some of the games have gotten a little slower because the players have, you know, undergone that first shock of fatigue and are in their recovery stage for their second or third game. And I think the Bayhawks have risen to that challenge, and that's why they're, you know, at 3-0, they clinched a playoff spot, which, all right, man, whatever you want to say to make it a season to make yourself feel better, you do what you got to do. Another guy I do want to give a shout out to, though, is Beccaro, man, on the Outlaws. He is silly. It's silly. I don't even know how else to describe it. Dude is silly. And he's a weapon on a team that already had a ton of weapons, right?
Yeah, he is. I mean, what, he's got a hat trick in every game so far.
Yep.
He is, you know, we saw him today, well, when we're recording this, against the Lizards, you know, drawing the assignment against Ben Randall. So, you know, he's demanding the respect and the attention from the opponents, not sneaking up on anybody anymore. And, I mean, he's just getting, you know, inside position, getting the first step. He's beating you every possible way at the attack position. I mean, yeah, he's as good as, you know, I kind of said a little bit, I'm not patting myself on the back. You know, he's obviously a superstar player. It's not like, you know, I found him out of nowhere. But as good as I was like, man, I think this guy's going to be good, he's exceeded any sort of expectation. I thought he was going to fit in well with the team and contribute. I did not anticipate this sort of takeover.
Yeah, he's been incredible. 10 goals, I believe, total. 3 in each game, like you said. You know, Denver just killing it. We're going to go team by team, kind of do a little mini breakdowns here for each squad. Unfortunately, we're going to start at the bottom. This is dealer's choice. And by dealer, I mean Rosie. I'm throwing you under the bus because I was like, what, you want to do top bottom or bottom top? And you were like, no, let's start at the bottom. So
yeah,
that's what we're doing. It's not his fault. It had to be. You got to talk about the bottom team at some point, so we might as well do it now. Connecticut Hammerheads. What happened? What has happened to this franchise?
So a key takeaway from watching the Connecticut Hammerheads. So first of all, I think they got dealt a real bad hand. Their first game, technically in existence, against the Outlaws. That's not a good way to have to start off here. You know,
not like, great.
Yeah, not ease your way in. Ease your way in. That's not fun. But other than that, I think the team defense is the key problem there. It's not ideal. They have been what stuck out to me the most in their last game was kind of falling for the elementary stuff, like the backdoor cuts, you know, the things that you would, if you're a coach, that you really get on your team about, like the things that really bother you. You know, if the other team is just faster or something like that, you know, if they're drawing out, you know, ISO plays and they've just got a world beater who keeps, you know, inverting and crushing you, you know, there's only so much you can do. But if it's like something where they're just waiting till your back is turned and running behind you, or they're feeding in the middle and you're just not on your guy enough, those are the things that just drive coaches mad. And those are some of the things we've been seeing from Connecticut's team defense. You know, I feel like watching them, you can tell like maybe they need, it seems like they are the team that's lacking the strong veteran core at the position. You know, I think coming into the season, the attack, they seemed like, I was super excited to see their attack line. You know, I was like, these guys are going to be fun. You know, this is a combination of people who are, you know, talented and entertaining attackmen. I'm looking forward to it. And I was hoping maybe some of these, some of the polls would kind of pop up and establish themselves a little bit more. I was excited to see Sean Scannone, and I think he has resumed his strong play. He also super gets peppered by a lot of shots, you know, and he's getting left out to dry there a little bit. So, yeah, I think that's just what they're lacking so far.
Listen, they just don't have enough talent. It's not something I, like, enjoy saying, but it's an unfortunate outcome of their, you know, last-minute defections to the PLL of Salama and Pulver. I think that kind of wrecked any kind of defense identity that they had. I think their best player is Scannone or Scannone. I still don't know how to say it. I've been told two different ways. You know, sorry, man. I'm saying it because I like your play. So either way, I'm not trying to drag you. I think, you know, guys like Ryan McNamara are going to get number one matchups now. You know, Will Sands, unfortunately, hasn't been the guy that I think they wanted him to be in as far as a playmaker, because that was a straight-up swap with Boston for Bryce Wasserman. You know, and I think that Boston would say that they got the better end of that deal at this point, just in terms of pure production. Michael Krause has been not good. And I don't say that like with any joy in my heart. You know, he's got way more turnovers than goals. I think he's got 10 turnovers now. He has 0 points or 1 point. You know, you can't have that. That's a guy that has to produce for you. And I think that they have a lot of players that are wide sweeping Dodgers and nobody that can draw any other defensive attention. So when you have a lot of guys that like to sweep and carry and not necessarily dump, they try to create their own kind of shot and get to their own space. You're going to have a lot of standing around. You're going to have a lot of easy, and that's easy to play defense on. You know, if you don't bang the ball, you're easy to play defense against. You have to move the ball. And they're not spread. They're compact. They got way too many guys in the crease. Just watching them play offense is frustrating. But they do. It's not like they don't have any talent. They have guys that can, you know, drop bombs. They got guys that can step in and have rope from 15 to 20. They're not getting open looks because the guys driving with the ball are running all the way to the corner flag and then like kicking it to X and then like kind of jogging back into position. It's not going to win you games. It's just not. Like, they've looked good in a couple games. Like, they hung with the Lizards. I thought they played well against them, and then it was over. You know, it was just play well for, like, a quarter or two. And I think a lot of people have made the point that, you know, just like you made it earlier in the podcast, is these teams are, you know, coming into this pretty cold. And they ran that first game that was straight adrenaline, full speed, full tilt in 120 degree heat, whatever they're saying, melting cleats, you know, all sorts of stuff like that. And they got a new ball. They got different boxes, different rules, different changes to everything. And it's a miracle it didn't look worse, to be honest with you. I don't think it was bad. I'm not sitting here telling you like every game was terrible, but you are seeing a pattern now, especially like the third and fourth day, of teams having to slow down because they can't run guys forever. You know, 25-man rosters are nice and all, but they're not 30-man rosters, and they're not 30 deep, and they're not this team in particular, talking about this team, they are not 25 deep, you know, and that is just a fact of the matter. But I think, you know, they just have to work to win games and try to outwork teams to win. But I don't know if they can do that with such little time left. Let's move on to the New York Lizards. Lizards, surprisingly fun to watch, but hasn't really translated into wins. What does this team need to do to make the playoffs in your mind?
Well, before I answer that, let me double back two quick things about the old Hammerheads.
Sure.
First of all, shout out Bubba Voigt. I have enjoyed his performances off ball, cutting in the slot. He seems to be thriving in that sort of system, a little more productive than last year. So I have enjoyed his play. Second, it is pronounced Scannoni. I just looked it up in a UMass pronunciation guide. So apologies for my butchering it the first time around. Now, as for the Lizards, I think their key issue has been consistency. They have started off very strong in their earlier games. Like, they came out and, you know, watching them against the Bayhawks and really kind of opened some eyes there. It was, you know, you're wondering what's going on. They have this ability to come right out of the gate, regardless of their opponent. And, you know, they had some contributions from a lot of different people. I think that's one of the reasons why I found them so enjoyable to watch. You know, heading into this season, you wonder, oh, is it going to be the Dylan Malloy show? Who's going to step up with them? You know, like Colin Burke is obviously a high draft pick, so they, you know, probably have a lot of, you know, hopes in him, but are they going to keep him at midfield? They're going to try to bump him down and attack and work with Malloy. What's going to happen there? And then they have some guys who you've seen several years previously, and you don't know exactly what you're going to get from them. You know, you have like Nicky Galasso, where it's, you know, okay, we know this name. We've seen him year after year after year, you know, a few games this year, a few games that year. Not necessarily this sort of every game performer. So you didn't really know, but these guys have all kind of turned around and been, you know, steady contributors. And in their latest performance, against the Outlaws. Was another sort of situation where that time they just went toe to toe with them, and the game was marred by a very unfortunate moving pick call at the end that really sucked all the air out of the building. But we did see that they can compete with somebody. You know, if you can compete with the Outlaws, you can compete with, you know, they are the upper tier, right? So, you know, you should be able to hold your own against anybody. I think they have also kind of been plagued by a problem that we were talking about with the Hammerheads, the team defense stuff. And again, like, this might come back to unfamiliarity, getting thrown in the situation late, getting everybody back on the same page very quickly. You know, I think defense is always kind of a step behind if you have very strong offensive individuals. You know, like, for example, they're going against, you know, Chris Eslany and Ryan Lee, and they have to figure out what to do against those guys who know each other very well, know what they're doing, and you know, they score a goal, and you can see Austin Kaut rallying his whole team, you know, yelling at some guys saying, you were supposed to be here, you were supposed to be there. Time is definitely not something that these teams have the benefit of really having. So if you fall behind in this sort of compressed tournament, you can really be out of luck very quickly. And that might be the situation they're finding themselves in. But as far as the Lizards go in particular, do you think their sort of defensive lapses are more of a training camp, you know, being very small, quarantine thing as a whole? Think it's personnel issue? Do you have any sort of a suspect in that situation?
I mean, you can't have Ben Randall guard six guys. Yeah. If you could, that'd be great. They'd probably have at least two wins. But they don't, and they can't. And I do think it's personnel related. I have no idea what they're running on defense. I'm watching them play, and I'm like, all right, I think they're hedging. Nope. Nope. He just wasn't looking at his guy. You know, it's one of those things where you're trying to figure out what they're doing. With it, watching them and the Outlaws in particular actually was interesting, because you can see what the Outlaws are doing, right? They know when they're doubling quick. They know at what position on the field they're supposed to double quick, and you can see them switch guys so quickly and work with picks and recognize it. And I think that's down to their coaching, and we're not talking about the Outlaws yet, but I think that there are aspects of this Lizards team that just can be kind of shored up if you simplify the scheme, right? The offense seems to be working. I don't think the offense is the problem, and their special teams aren't bad. I mean, I think Kaut is not the goalie he was 3 years ago in terms of him. He's not going to he might still have a 20 save game in him, but he had regularly 15, 16, 18 save games, like won his team games when he played for the Launch. It's flat out, like by himself. I don't know if we're getting that from him, and that's okay. Like, you can't expect that from everybody all the time. But I think, you know, it really does break down to what happens if Ben Randall gets beat. And they don't have an answer for that. And he will get beat, but he's still the best defender one-on-one in the league, I think. I mean, I'm sure other people will have other opinions on that, but in terms of covering guys and playing solid defense on them, like, yeah, Lyle had a good game against him, but, like, he made Lyle work. He made him work. Like, that is what you have to do if you're a good defender. Like, you can't – and I've used this analogy before, right? So – I played defense when I was younger, and I was at a camp, and I would guard a guy, and I would do really well on him 15 times out of 20. And then, like, the other five times, you know, I'd get beat, and he would score because I would go for a dumb check, because out of the other 15 times that I did well, five or six of them, I just straight up took the ball and went up the field. And I had a coach pull me aside, and he's like, it's great that you're getting these turnovers, man, but, you know, you realize that if he gets five goals – and you cause five turnovers, he wins. Like, he wins. Right. You don't win. He wins. You have to focus in on your actual job. Your job is not to take the ball away as a defender. Your job is to limit the guy attacking your space. Your job is to make things difficult. And that's why I like Randall. That's why I think he's a really good defender. Really good defenders do that. Obviously, there's other aspects to defending. I'm just saying, in that particular instance, that's a thing that you have to look at. And I think that's a thing that this whole team could look at and improve from. Let's move on. Chris, finish this sentence. The Philadelphia Barrage are
The Philadelphia Barrage are occasionally deadly.
Oh, that's good.
I think rooting for the old Philly Barrage, you are signing yourself up to ride an emotional roller coaster. I think watching them, you have to feel good about some of the things they're putting out there. I think their man up has been very dangerous. I am a big fan of the Philly Barrage man up unit. They can string together the one more pass as good as anybody. You know, the tic-tac-toes, skip passes, whatever, cross crease. They love the cross crease feeds. You know, you can toss it over to Shane Jackson. He just dunks them. They can do stuff that is just absolutely amazing. They don't do it all the time. You know, it's not like 100% efficiency with their 6-on-6 game. But they have these moments where they just string together the most phenomenal stuff. Team-wise stuff, face-offs, I think, are a concern with only Alex Woodall there. There's still a lot of tournament to be played. You know, especially they've got a big game coming up against the Lizards. You know, if they win that and they can position themselves in to go to the semifinals, there's a lot of face-offs that are going to be handled in this scorching hot weather. Other teams are rolling out multiple weapons at the position, and he's pretty much the only guy there. Kevin Fox, long pole, has been in there a little bit to help. You know, I think it takes like two or three here and there, if need be, kind of spell Alex Woodall. But guys are getting seriously beat up all over this and all of the rosters, really. You know, getting a lot of like hamstring issues, you know, soft tissue stuff. You know, it's just, you know, this kind of stuff. It's a huge strain. It's piling up on guys. So I am concerned with the face-offs going forward. But like I said, occasionally deadly. That is what I say to that team.
Yeah, I think in trouble would be how I would answer that intro. But I think that's because this team was built for transition. Look at all the guys on this team that are two-way guys. You know, they have so many of them. Matt Wichter, his only job, it seems at the moment, is to run back, get the ball so they don't have to give it to a long pole to throw it 20 feet over a guy's head. And then Wichter runs through three guys to clear the ball. As soon as he crosses the midfield line, he passes. Like, right. They clearly have been like, don't push. And he's like, cool, okay, got you. You know, toss a coin to your Wichter, people. Let him have a go. Please. Please, let the man have a swing. He's literally like running. He's the worst job on the field. I'm going to run through three guys, get whacked on, and then pass the ball, get zero glory.
None.
Let him have a run. Let him go. Hashtag D3 life. I think if you look at kind of the rest of this team too, like obviously Tyson Gibson is a great addition. Mark Matthews is Mark Matthews. Like run him out of the box against shorties. And by run, I mean jog. It's fine. Whatever. I'm not here to bag on that. I think this team is still the Atlanta Blaze, man. This team is still doing Atlanta Blaze stuff all over the field.
Yep.
And for that, I mean, being super stupid in transition with defense. Just so dumb. I'm sorry. Like, I feel terrible saying that. But no team subs worse in the league. Except maybe Boston. I don't know. A couple times Boston has been insane with their subs. But the way that the splitting the boxes, again, has not helped this team. It's destroyed their best weapon, which is keying the transition and going. But the problem is sometimes it's a pole, and if someone slides to that pole quick or chases him down or they get someone out of the box, like it kills everything and everyone just stops. You know, this team in particular and the Lizards and the Hammerheads, one thing they do that drives me insane is when there's a break, a short break, not a fast break where it's a clear break, right? A slow break, the attackmen just stand there. They don't run to position. They don't get in the overloaded triangle. They don't do anything like that. They just stare like, give me the ball. Give me the ball. Give me the ball. Like,
right.
You don't do that. Get into the right position. Have some. If you want to be a bailout guy, be a bailout guy. Pop to the wing, ball side, great, fine. But if it's a slow break, create something with your motion. Don't wait. And I think some of that is down to the tiredness, but it's also the preparedness. Right? Like you have to be ready to play that kind of high level lacrosse. And they didn't have a lot of time to practice. They probably they definitely didn't practice fast breaks. Like, this is a team that needs to score in early offense, and they just don't seem to be able to get the box ready to execute that early offense. And it's a shame. You know, that's not great. I think that they can. There's still time, right? It's not like they're dead. It's not like this team is bad. There just need to be like little adjustments, and, you know, don't make stupid turnovers. I know for a fact that Spencer Ford's head is exploding. I know they're not going into locker rooms, but wherever they're going after the game, his head is exploding, and people are going to have to collect his brain and put it back into his skull, because there's no way this team is doing what he wants them to do. You know what I mean? So I don't think it's on him. I really don't. I think it's on the execution of what is being presented.
Right. They're like a really, really smart kid who's in danger of failing his classes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great analogy. Shout out to the smartest kid, Colin Menikis, D3. He's actually playing really well for them, so I'm happy to see that. Let's move on to the next team. Chris, the Boston Cannons have been fun to watch, but also wildly inconsistent given the amount of insane talent that is on this offense. Is this a championship contender team for you?
I think they have championship level players.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen a championship level team performance from them yet. I would not welcome them to the neighborhood of the Bayhawks or the Outlaws based on a full game performance I've seen from them yet. I think their midfield play was strong early, but then you have their most recent game against the Barrage, and Kyle Jackson and Chalen Rogers were both kept off the board in that one. So you kind of have to wonder if there's going to be a matter of consistency, or if there was some sort of secret that Philly figured out, or if this was more on Boston not quite getting the job done in that regard. If the defenses keep putting a short stick on Mark Cockerton. I think there was a big sort of short stick on your lefty finisher sort of battle that they were doing in that Boston-Philly game. Shane Jackson had one. Mark Cockerton had one for a significant portion of the game. Now, Cockerton, I believe, finished with 2 goals, which is fine. You know, that's good. You know, if somebody gets you 2 goals, good job. You know, you'll need some other people to step up significantly, but you also can't really complain about 2 goals from Cockerton. That being said, he's not destroying you for it, and the midfield doesn't show up. I think they could be in some real trouble against teams that can see that sort of thing and use it to their advantage. You know, figure out sort of, you know, certain defensive keys to get the most out of their team, those situations. Like, you know, if the Outlaws try the same thing against the Cannons, is there going to be another answer that can somehow free up this midfield to contribute a little bit more? I think they're going to have to do something like that, or else just kind of run the risk of staying in that upper middle tier.
Yeah, I think also, and I've said this many times on Twitter while I'm watching the games, why is Brian Cole not getting the ball? He didn't touch. He barely touched the ball in the first game. Second game, he got a little bit more action. This third game, he finally, you know, had a chance to go at people, finish with a hat trick. Still only took 4 shots. Randy Stats took 9 shots, and Bryce Wasserman took 7. Listen, you need Cockerton to take 5 to 8 shots a game, period. Find a way to get him the ball. Don't let him carry. Just have him float. Let him chill on that side. Find a way for him to get open, because he only needs half a second to get his shot off. You know, that's the guy you want shooting. So find a way to get him to do it. And that's it. I think Boston has this kind of embarrassment of riches when it comes to especially lefties. It's like Riley O'Connor, not out of nowhere, but like kind of out of nowhere, has been one of their most successful dodge and shoot guys. And I think Kyle Jackson's kind of become more of a off-ball guy. He's carrying, but like teams aren't letting him get anywhere near his sweet spots. You know, Randy Stats has been, I mean, he's had some games, but like he hasn't produced like he did last year. That's just a fact. You know, I'm not saying he's playing bad, but he's not producing 5, 6, 7, 8 point games like he was. And I think that's down to guys like Bryce Wasserman taking. Bryce Wasserman took like 13 shots the other night, you know, had 4 goals. Great. But like, this is a team where you can't have anyone take double digit shots because there's too many guys that are good on the team for anyone to take that many shots. There's no need for it. Spread the ball, like make the defense guess. I think people know what Boston are going to do and they're either prepared for it and Boston does it anyway and scores, or they're prepared for it and there's a turnover or the ball goes out of bounds, or, you know, it's backed up by the shots backed up. You know, I think there's a lot of things that Boston can do differently to improve that. And I mean, I made the hot take comment I made was they have too many lefties. There's just too many. And it's not that they're, you know, that's dumb because everyone has too many righties if you look at it that way. Right. You can't really say that and mean it. But when I say that, I mean too many lefties are the same kind of player. Too many guys that dodge to the same spot. Too many guys that occupy the same space. Too many guys that want to go to that kind of low elbow and operate. It's just too many guys. It's too many guys. And in the last game they played, they moved guys around and ended up working out for them. So, you know, I think you just have to look at the best way to spread the ball, period. And if you're running a wheel with, and then you run one guy in, you got a 2-3-1, perfect. I think you just go high, low, 2-3-1, bang that ball, get it to X, get out of the way if he drives. If he doesn't drive, you know, kick it back the other way. Just no rollbacks on this team. They're just running whatever they run. They get to a spot and then they look like they're in trouble and they just pass the ball. There just doesn't seem to be any cohesion. And I think that's what you need. When you have so many talented players, you have to have an offense that utilizes all of those talents. And I think that's really hard to coach, by the way. That's not easy. It's not an easy thing. I'm not like, oh, we'll just run this and you'll be fine. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying work to get that to be at the highest level. Everyone has to be on the same page. And it's clear that they're not. Defensively, I think this team is a little bit in trouble. But at the same time, like, Morocco bails them out. You know, and I said this last game, he's the kind of goalie, like, he needs to make a save on the first shot. And then he's fine. If he doesn't save the first shot or the second shot or the third shot, you're looking at a rough half minimum, right? Like, I'm sure if, like, he sat down, you put a lie detector on him, he'd be like, yeah, you're right. You know what I mean? Like, right. I really think that he's that. And that's okay. Like, all goalies are kind of like that to a certain degree, right? But you saw it. Especially when they played the barrage, and you made that first save. You're like, oh, all right, cool, all right, I buy that. All right, I'll. He's gonna have a good game now. And guess what? He did. You know, I mean, this is a guy who made a save when the ball went off the pipe when any other goalie would have hit him in the butt and gone in. Yep. Against the Bayhawks. Do you remember that shot? Mm-hmm, you know, right? Mm-hmm. This is incredible. He just caught it. Casual catch. Anyone else, it bounces right off their butt and into the net. But I think the defensive identity is tied very strongly to Morocco, but they're using Pugel like a cudgel, just like wielding him at people. Like, and people are throwing their bodies. Like, this is a physical defense. It's kind of like, you know, throwback style. It's failed a couple times where guys have kind of thrown a little too much elbow. Joseph Caparata, famously known for elbows. I think, you know, there are other defensive performers. I think Tim Edwards has played pretty well. Goodrich has been quiet, but at the same time, like, not bad. Just not, you know, lighting it up in transition, because transition is, like we said before, transition is dead. So I think you look at the Canons and you're like, I look at them and I'm like, why aren't you better? You know, why aren't you better?
Right.
But maybe I expect too much. Maybe that's on me. But I think that they can still get better is the good news. So, I mean, they're in third place. They're not doing bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're I just think they're not in that other, you know, I think they're in a fine neighborhood, you know? I think it's I think it's three kind of, and it kind of sucks that I have to say this because, I mean, who knows what the lizards might have done in those last 30 seconds, you know? Maybe none of this applies, but I have to put them in this bottom two tier because, you know, your record is what it is. So, you know, maybe they could have shaken up the world, but as it stands right now, I feel that there is a divide. Two teams, two more teams, and then two bottom teams. Just, you know, I don't see any sort of crossing between the neighborhoods right now.
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I would probably throw another line in between Boston and Philly, just in terms of potential. But I think it's close. I think you're right. I think it's like just a little park subdivision, maybe a cul-de-sac between the neighborhoods. It's not anything crazy. There's no fences. Let's talk about the Outlaws. Pulled out a close one tonight against the Lizards, thanks to the phantom moving pick heard around the world. I don't know how you call that a moving pick, and you didn't call any moving picks in the other games at all.
Gosh.
And all I saw was moving picks in every game. What are you doing? I think, listen, there was motion on the play, but he wasn't touching the other guy.
Right.
He wasn't setting the pick yet. He was trying to block the other guy's engagement, but he wasn't setting the pick yet. So it was kind of a little baby games. Like, listen, we all like grab the guy's jersey. We're guarding, like, you know, like maybe step on his foot, maybe like, oh, your shoelace is untied. Like it was that. It wasn't a turnover, man. I don't know. At the professional level, if you're going to call that a moving pick, you literally have to call a moving pick on every other possession. That's my take on it. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. Cost the team a win. Or at least a chance at a win, not a win. But, you know, the Outlaws are still – listen, when I think about this team, I just think about defense because I'm super impressed. What's your take?
I am very impressed as well. I think the big question heading into the tournament with these guys is what are they going to do at close defense and what are they going to do in the goal? And they're like, not only do we have a replacement in goal, but we've got two guys – and we're apparently going to be so comfortable with them, we'll just have them split halves right away. And just that's just going to be how we do things. And, I mean, and based on what? You know, like Nick Wachuta, no experience at the pro level. And, you know, sure, why not? Just toss one out there. They have had no hesitation, and it's worked out well. I think their close defense is great. I think they get the ball up very well. Get it out of there quickly. I've been very pleased, very impressed by, I mean, really like Kyle Pless, one-on-one stuff. I've been impressed with his work. Rex Rode has been doing a solid job as well. They're picking off passes. Like I said, clean scoops. They're doing a great job. I can't say enough good stuff about this close defense. How about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'm super impressed. I didn't think that they were going to be any good. I'll be honest. I'm happy to be wrong. That's the thing. I don't care about being right and wrong. I looked at this defense and I was like, well, you lost your two best. Quinn and Joe were calling the game and they were like, oh yeah, well, they lost their goalie and you know, they lost Zach Currier. And I was like, they lost their two best defenders. They lost Eli Gobrek and Finn Sullivan. That was just as big as those other two losses. Let's be real. You know, but they found a way, man. They found a way. I knew that the offense would be fine. They have so many guys that are producing. Ryan Lee is a beast. You know, hashtag D3Left again, just representing for RIT. Engineers hat trick tonight, five goals. Chris, how do we talk about Junior? What do we say? What do we do?
So here's the thing about Junior. So I got a sort of, let me start with the sort of tactical number X and O kind of thing. And then I'll get to the, you know, internal emotional sort of thing. X and O's, here's what I like about what John Grant Jr. has been doing this tournament. As the offensive coordinator / assistant coach of the team, I like that I've seen him out there. I feel an amount that he is probably cognizant of. You know, he's not constantly out there. He will go out for, you know, I've seen him, you know, running extra man situations. And you can see him out there sometimes. I've seen some like transition play where he has been visibly yelling to his teammates, you know, you need to pass to this guy, you need to get in this spot, this and that and that. And if you can run, you know, five 20-something-year-old guys handling their shares of the offense while Junior is, you know, camped out at X telling everybody what to do, if it is successful for them, you know, more power to them. They are trying sort of different approaches than the other guys. You know, they're running settled six with a pole. You know, sometimes that's just what they're going to do. Like Andrew Newbold, who I should have mentioned earlier, but I think has also been playing exceptionally well.
Yeah.
He's not scared to just come down and he'll just kind of, all right, let me settle in down here for a minute, try to take advantage of this situation. So I do like that a lot. I like that we've seen Junior doing that. We haven't, at least in my opinion, seen him putting himself in a situation where he's like, okay, this is my last turn. Let me get mine. You know, and just staying out there, firing junk, ripping off shots left and right, just trying. You know, he had two assists in his previous game, not the Lizards, but the one before then. Four shots, this against the Barrage. So, like, not overwhelming anybody else with sort of selfish intent or anything like that. So I think he is bringing a sort of unique perspective to this very, very weird job that he has. Now, the other side of it, compared to last year, I thought he was really good last year. Obviously in spurts, because, I mean, he's not 20 years old, you know? So he's not going to take over a game for, you know, 35 minutes. But he was dropping plays here and there. He's, you know, working angles, very, very intelligent, you know, body positioning and things like that. He's doing great. I think the past year has been a significant period of time. You know what I mean? Like, I think when you're 21 to 22, it's 365 days, but that year is smaller than when you're, you know, 43 to 44. That's just science. It's just how it works. And I think we're in kind of a weird position here. Let me know if you co-sign on this. It's easy for us to feel old in either direction.
Yes.
Like, they're going to talk about somebody on the broadcast, and they'll be like, this guy doesn't know what a payphone is. And you're like, oh, man, I'm so old. You know, this guy, you know, only knows Netflix. That's how he got all of his videos growing up. And we're like, wow, I'm old. And then also somebody older than you can also make you feel very old. You're like, oh, okay. No, you know, no air gates this summer, you know. So it's been a little bit of an emotional tug of war in this sort of situation. But I do think he's playing it generally in a very smart fashion, and I don't think he would do anything. I mean, he's still the coach of the team, so he's trying to make the team win in any way he can do it possibly. And so I have faith that he will do what needs to be done when it needs to be done.
Listen, I think he should just play at Axon Man Up. I don't think he should be anywhere else. You know?
Yeah, maybe that's
it. I just don't think he should be anywhere else on a field. He got caught up at the top of the 2-point line, and he didn't even go, like, the ball kind of bounced out of his stick and he looked at it. And there was time, dude. I feel like if he took like 2 steps, he could have picked it up and moved it. And instead, he just anticipated the guy guarding him being so much quicker than him that he threw the check before the defender was there. You can't do that. Like, that's got to be that's a sign that you are already upset. You turn the ball over and you're just reacting. You know, that, like, you got to be in a position where you can have the ball on your stick and be comfortable. And the only way that happens if you're playing an X and no one's guarding you. You know, it's the, by the way, as an offensive player, it's the greatest job in the world. Why wouldn't you want to do that? Hanging up a defenseman is like the greatest feeling in the world. Like, yeah, you're hung up. Hang out over there. I got you. I'm going to pass this and we're going to get a goal. And you know it. And you can't get me because you're scared that if you go the wrong way, I'll go the other way. Like, that's great. That's like, honestly, that's some ultimate power stuff. Like you're holding, you know, some serious power over the defender and the rest of everyone else on the field. They're waiting to see what you do. That's what I think he can do. Unfortunately, I think that's all he can do now. And that's okay. That's okay. Like, I don't think that's controversial to even say. But I mean, you got to make way for guys in the six, like Dan Beccaro, to operate from there. You know, you got to get the ball to Chris Asllani. You have to get out of the way. And I think you're right. He hasn't really pushed and made too many bad plays where he hasn't done that. But you can tell that he's frustrated that he can't do that when he's playing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's upsetting. And I don't want to pile, and this isn't about piling on. I just think that, you know, if he's going to play, that's the role. I don't think there's another role, right? I struggle with it, right? Like, we're both kind of struggling with this. Like, dude, this is like a guy we love watching. Like, we love watching him play. Like, we don't want to have this conversation, but I can't tell you how many people were like, why aren't you talking about Junior? And I'm like, I'll talk about Junior when it's time. And this is the time. You know, that's what you got to do. Sometimes you have to do that in any part of any career that you have. And in sports, it's even harder than anything else, you know, is to kind of step aside and make way for players that are more mobile and can do different things. But, you know, it's not like he can't play at all. I'm not saying like never put your helmet on again. I'm just saying like just play men up. That's it. It'll make your team better. But that being said, like I just, you know, how is the championship game not at Los Bayhawks? What's a scenario where that doesn't happen?
I mean, it really seems like, I mean, ever since last year, it just seems like this was the collision course. You get these guys back. Obviously, it's a different situation, different scenario. The rosters are a little bit different. But the jerseys are still the same. The franchise is still the same. The history is still the same. This time, it's in the Bayhawks' house. You know, it really seems like this was kind of, you know, I feel like they're going to be the 1-2. Obviously, they got to win their games. You know, there's no buys or anything like that. There's still a little bit of time. Seeding still have to be determined and things like that. But, I mean, if you're talking just chalk, you're really anticipating Bayhawks Outlaws one more time.
Let's talk about the Bayhawks. They are clearly the most talented and cohesive team in the league. They clinched a playoff berth in 3 days, which I checked on the internet. That's a pro sports record.
Wow.
I'm going to put that out there for you. That is a record. It has never been done. Chris, how do you beat the Bayhawks?
So if there is a formula for beating the Bayhawks, they definitely haven't revealed it yet. That said, they have revealed a weakness. Here's their weakness.
Yes.
Every game, all three of their games, they have been the slow starters. Each game, the other team has jumped out and dropped a few goals on them before they kind of woke up and started fighting back. Most notably, the Cannons jumped out to their lead, scored two. And, you know, it's kind of like, yikes, what's going on here? You know, these guys were sleeping against the Lizards, but, you know, maybe there was a little bit more wiggle room to mess around against the Lizards than the Cannons. But then they rattled off, I think, 9 unanswered, and they were just fine. So if there's anything I've noticed from these past victories, I would say it's that, you know, maybe somebody catches them sleeping a little bit too long and then they can't fire things back up. That's always the concern with you sort of, you know, we'll turn it on after we get punched once or twice. You know, maybe you don't turn it on one of these times. But I mean, until that actually happens, it looks pretty good for them.
If I'm searching, right? And I'm searching, I'm looking for any kind of weakness, any cracks, anything like that. It has to be that they commit penalties. If you can get in there, if you can get joined with them and get into a physical battle, they will retaliate and you'll get some man up chances. And also, if you have a dominant faceoff guy, which there have not been any dominant faceoff guys, which I think is a little surprising. I think we thought a couple teams would roll in terms of their draw guys. And, you know, in order to be dominant at the X, you need reps. And you need reps against people that are at least similar to the people you're going to be going against in games. And I think that that's very hard to train for faceoff guys, right? So I think that that's part of the problem, and there isn't enough time for that to balance out. So I think we're to not balance out, but rebalance itself and have a dominant performance. I don't think that's happening, especially if Max Adler's already kind of dehydrated and, you know, he missed tonight's game. He was in the ambulance after the game the other night and went to the hospital. So I think if you're those are two ways you can get at them. And then if you can catch them in transition, which, like, you can't really. they keep guys on in transition, and they're one of the only teams that those guys score for. Tchaikovsky scored, you know, IDA scored. Like, they have guys that just can stay on and actually be two-way guys. And I don't see a lot of that from anyone else unless it's a fast break. Like, they're a team that can run a slow break with a D-mid and score. And I don't know if anyone else can do that. I mean, that's – you're looking for weaknesses. That's not one of them. I mean, they ride. They do all the little things kind of better. And even when they don't, you know, they – like you said, they do – they are prone to lapses where they just give up goals, right? Defensively, it's not the same team. There's no Jesse Bernhardt here. You know, CJ Costabile is the best LSM. Maybe it's – maybe Kyle Plesser-Nubel. I don't know. But I think CJ Costabile is number one. Two 2-pointers in a game. He's a threat either way. And he's a good cover. I think he's improved his footwork a lot, just watching him individually playing. But I mean, there just aren't a lot of weaknesses here, and they got the best player in the league in Lyle Thompson. You know, like, what are you going to do? I don't know how you beat them. I really don't. And I'm not in the bag for the team. You know, I did not pick them to win. I feel dumb. I feel like I should have, but at the same time, I didn't. So it's not about rooting for or against. I just like watching them play, man. Lyle's had some silly goals. Like, why doesn't it make sense? When you watch him play, why aren't you like, oh yeah, no, I get it. I don't get it.
There are legitimate times where he will do stuff and I will just be like, now, come on. You know what I mean? I won't even be like, whoa, that was amazing. I'll be like, wait a second, hold on. Like, hold on. I've got two hands. I have a skeletal structure. I could never in a million years do anything resembling any of those things.
It's like watching stunt doubles. Like, just do stunts. But it's real life. You know? It's like watching real martial artists. Like, do crazy things and throw their chi at things. And yeah. It's just Lyle Thompson playing lacrosse and having fun. I've missed it so much, man. I can't tell you how much I missed it. I'm really happy it's back. And I know, like, there's some negative energy going on in this pod. It's probably because it's midnight. Sorry, man. I wanted to sleep tonight. It ain't happening. But let's work through it. Bayouts are the best team. I'd be surprised if they weren't champions, but let's get into the recommendation of the week. Chris, what do you got?
So here is my recommendation of the week. I don't think I've recommended this before, but I'm not positive. So if I have, just know that I'm doing it because I really like it and I forgot.
Okay.
My recommendation of the week. Here's what you can do. Go to Amazon or whatever, online place you buy, but I'm going to tell you it works on Amazon. And, you know, your search bar, you can type in weird meat. just type in weird meat, and here's what you're going to get. There's a gentleman by the name of Buffalo Bob. I assume it's a gentleman. Maybe it's just the corporation name and not actually a person. But Buffalo Bob sells delicious jerkies and spiced meats of all sorts of weird varieties. And I was thinking one day, around November, I was like, I could go for some weird food products. Burlap bag arrives at my home, filled with a random assortment of spiced jerky sticks. Of all sorts of different animals. And you find out what the animals are based on whatever he caught, or I don't know how he picks them, but they all show up in a burlap sack at your door. Delicious variety of spiced meats. I'm talking, you get some bison, some alligator, whatever. Sometimes it's just like a couple random parts of different things. So it puts it together and gives it like a name, like roadkill. And just, I don't know. But they were all fantastic. I had some salmon jerky that was not the best.
Yeah.
But the rest of them have been fantastic. So my recommendation is some Buffalo Bob's spiced weird meat jerky. I have a jackalope spiced meat stick on deck that I'll be breaking out tomorrow. And I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Out of all the food things you've recommended, that is easily the weirdest one. It's just like not even close. But it has inspired my choice. So the first game that Quint and Joe were back calling, they were kind of, you know, Quint was kind of getting into him and being like, well, you know, there's two kinds of people that, you know, dealt with this quarantine, people that were kind of exercising and people that were eating ice cream, you know, like you, Joe. And I didn't like that. I didn't like that. Why you got to go Joe like that? Why you got to do that? No one wanted to hear that. That's not fair. And I sat there and I was like, why do I not like that? I don't like that. And then someone on Twitter was like, oh, are you an ice cream guy? And I was like, what did you say to me? I don't get mad at a lot of stuff on Twitter. I was like, what did you say to me? Like, I looked at the tweet and said it out loud. I was like, what did you say? And was like, no, actually, I'm not. And that's true because I've kind of replaced ice cream with, like, the weirdest thing. And now this is going to sound weird and gross, but it's not. It's definitely not weirder or grosser than random spiced meat. I'm going to put that. I buy frozen organic blueberries, which are like smaller, and I pour them into a bowl. And then I buy not oat milk, but like oat milk creamer, which is like thicker. And I just pour it over that and I mix it and throw it back in the fridge. And I eat that as like my quote unquote ice cream, my healthy ice cream. And the oat milk creamer has like 0 grams of sugar or whatever. It's just like a generic one. It's not one of the barista ones where it's special and frothy. And that's kind of my replacement for ice cream. And so when someone was like, oh, you're an ice cream guy, I was like, what? What?
How dare you?
I really want to be, but I'm not. It's not fair. I actually like – I saw that and then I was listening to Quint make fun of Joe and I was like, you know what, man? I really want ice cream right now. And I'm not having it. I'm going to have this blueberries and oat milk like a weirdo. That's what I'm going to do. So that's my recommendation. We give that a try if you're trying to, like, you know, quit ice cream or whatever. It's definitely not ice cream. It's not nearly as good, but it'll hit the spot, man. It's actually really good after a workout. I highly recommend it. All right. That is the weirdest place to end this podcast, but that's what we're going to do right now. Hey, thanks for listening to the Inside Lacrosse Pro Lacrosse Podcast, MLL Edition. Chris, where can people find you on the interweb?
You can find me on Twitter at ChrisRosie22 or Instagram at ChrisRosenthal.
And you can find me at TheKyleDevitt on Twitter and Instagram. Make sure to check out InsideLacrosse.com for all the latest coverage of the MLL tournament. And Chris and I have a fun thing planned for you guys kind of towards the weekend when this thing concludes. So be on the lookout for that. We're doing our classic team up for a big event. So please check that out. And don't forget to rate, subscribe, and tell a friend about this podcast. It really helps us out. Till next time. We on fire, step up in the park.